Welcome to episode 264 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on January 7th, 2022. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. To kick off 2022, we circle back to one final tip around the Azure CLI before diving into a discussion about the new meeting expiration policy settings for Microsoft Teams recordings. Then we wrap up with a couple of new places to keep an eye on for new features coming to Microsoft 365. Scott.
Ben.
It is the first podcast of 2022 that we are recording.
It is.
People have listened in 2022, if anybody still listens, but this is the first one recording in the new year.
Does anybody listen?
I don't know.
We get downloads, but getting feedback sometimes feels like pulling teeth. I feel like we should do that. What is it? You know, when you're watching a video on YouTube, if you're listening right now, stop what you're doing, pull your car over to the side of the road and tweet at the podcast account at MS Cloud IT Pro and let us know you're listening. We'll see how many responses we get.
You should absolutely do that and tell Scott how amazing he is.
Well, we shouldn't do any of that. But yeah, we are into 2022, which is kind of fun. I'm excited just to kind of, you know, leave the previous 2 years of dumpster fires behind and start what is hopefully not a third year of a dumpster fire.
I was going to say, you're making a big assumption here that this is not just going to be another dumpster fire.
Into it with that mindset, you know. So, like, as we get going this year, our episode last week, we kind of ended off with Azure CLI tips and tricks. So I figured, just as a little bit of follow-up, I would throw one more out there in that same vein. So we talked about a bunch of different things, how to run multiple shells. We really didn't get into, like, how you actually use Cloud Shell and, you know, how you can change configuration parameters in it and use tables or TSV outputs, or how do you get into James path queries and all those kinds of things. So if you're kind of going down that path and you're getting started with it, I would encourage you to also explore extensions within things like the Cloud Shell and the Azure CLI. And there was a new extension that I saw some documentation on about recently. I think it's a brand new extension. It's called AZ Init. So that's an extension that you can add into the CLI that basically gives you a really quick in-tool way to go ahead and change your configuration quickly. So it comes with these preset bundles inside of it, with the thought process being that one bundle can be used for, I think, human mode interaction. So yeah, as a human, you probably want to read things in tabular formatting as an output just for easier readability. But when you're doing the non-human thing and you're trying to, say, consume a service property and pass it to another, and you're trying to parse it with that James path query, then you're probably doing something like grabbing JSON output and trying to use kind of that native thing. So AZ Init lets you quickly switch effectively between modes. And what it's doing is it's using the config extension, so AZ config, and just making that a lot easier for you. So one of the bundles is really geared towards like human interaction with the CLI. So that'll do things like turn on verbose output. It will change your output formatting by default to a tabular format. It will bring syntax highlighting in the terminal forward for you. Turns on a progress bar for long-running commands, things like that, just so you can have a sense of what's going on. And then if you go into CLI mode, or kind of, I guess, automation mode, where maybe you'd be running like the Azure CLI from like a CI/CD pipeline, like an Azure DevOps, something like that, it's going to default to JSON output. It's not going to do verbose outputting. It's only going to output just generic errors. You're not going to have error recommendations, anything like that. You don't need syntax highlighting because it's all running in a process. So that just gets turned off. No progress bars, anything like that. So if you found the Cloud Shell stuff fun and you're like, yeah, all right, now I'm in the Cloud Shell, but now I actually got to use a shell and I'm sitting here in the Azure CLI, maybe you want to go out and check out how you can use the CLI with AZ Init to make your life a little bit easier.
Nifty. I saw this one pop up and I kind of glanced at it, but I have not played with it yet.
Yeah. I figured it was in the same vein as kind of things that that we've been talking about recently. So nice to throw out there as a quick piece of follow-up. And another one, we did just close out the holidays and lots of us had time off or we were all away and disconnected for a little while. If anybody is into watching video-based training and you're looking to consume free courseware, there is a really awesome cloud solution architect at Microsoft. His name is John Seville, and he releases all sorts of courses. He has, I can't remember if it's a weekly, bi-weekly update. I think it's a weekly update now on Azure, but he creates these really awesome videos. He created a course and released it over the holidays here that is an AZ-900, so an Azure Fundamentals certification course. It is 55 videos. It's 8.5 hours long. It's all free. It's all on YouTube. He has an accompanying GitHub repo that goes along with it, which includes a pretty good handout PDF that you can just go ahead and download and follow along and, you know, walk your way through the AZ-900 if that is something that you are interested in learning. So, you know, you can watch the video and then in the PDF, one of the things John does that's kind of nifty is he'll draw in real time on a Surface Hub. So he's got kind of a digital whiteboard behind him. And in that PDF, that handout, what he's included is all of the drawings that he's made throughout the course, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So if you're like just getting started, cloud's new thing to you, hey, we're in 2022, you're trying to learn a new thing, like maybe Azure, Microsoft 365 or something that you're just getting started with, particularly Azure, and you want to go take that fundamental certification, like that's one of your goals for this year, you know, this quarter, this half, whatever it happens to be, I would go check out this pretty cool free course that John put together before you potentially go and drop a bunch of money on a learning partner or something like that.
You know what my goal is for this year?
Not
to get enough people to take AZ-305 that it gets out of beta and I can actually figure out how I did on it.
It's going to come out of beta no matter what. So you shouldn't have to wait too long.
Well, but it was supposed to be out of beta in 2021 and it is still in beta from everything I can tell from looking it up online.
You should hopefully see your scores soon.
My score here soon.
Yeah.
My other goal is a digital whiteboard. That's a whole other rabbit hole. We'll get on that later. Now I lost my train of thought. Oh, so hey, Scott, do you think maybe we should create some YouTube demos of some of the stuff we talk about?
Maybe. Too?
Maybe? Think maybe. We could do something like that?
We can always try new things.
We'll try new things. And that'll be our goal for 2022. Something new.
Something.
Try some YouTube videos.
Something new. Something cloudy. Yep, absolutely.
All right. We'll have to see what we can do. You know what else you can do with scripting? I'm stretching here for a segue. You can adjust meeting recording policies in Microsoft Teams using the Cloud Shell. How'd you like that segue from tips and tricks?
That was a good one. I mean, you're reaching, but you're getting there.
I was reaching, but I made it. So, Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they've learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud. So this is something new that has come out just in the last day or two. There was an article that came out on how to manage Microsoft Team meeting recording auto expiration. And this one it makes sense. What's happening, if you haven't been keeping up to date with videos and Teams and meeting recording, is a lot of meeting recordings used to go into Stream V1, the whole Stream service. Now, if you have updated your settings or if you're new and in the future, they're all going to go to SharePoint or OneDrive based on some different rules on where the meeting was created, all of that, in terms of where these meeting recordings go, which technically is the new Stream V2. This is a whole other topic because I still don't fully understand this whole Stream V2 and how all of this is going to happen. Stay tuned throughout 2022 for that. But
you know what? When you figure out Stream V2, you can come and explain it to the rest of us because I haven't seen like a really good explanation of it either.
I don't know that there is one, which is why we're going to gloss over this for the time being. But all that being said, do you know what the average size of a meeting, an hour-long meeting recording is in Teams?
I do not. What
it is about 400 megabytes.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Guess what happens though if you have like, I mean, some of us, some of you, people have like 4 or 5 meetings a day. And if you're recording all of these, they can start to pile up and consume SharePoint and OneDrive storage. So now you can go in and configure expiration for these meeting recordings so they automatically get deleted. And Microsoft did a bunch of research around this, a bunch of watching their analytics. This probably was not as much research as just watching analytics, and found that 99% plus of all meeting recordings are never watched again after 60 days. So guess what they set the default to for auto-expiring meetings? 60 days, unless you're on an A1 plan, in which case it's only 30 days. So your new default in your Microsoft Teams is going to be set to 60 days so that after 60 days, the owner of said meeting is notified that meetings are going to get deleted. So it triggers a 30-day expiration, will trigger an auto-deletion 30 days after the file is created. And this is a little odd. Like, and I couldn't tell exactly how this works, but you essentially set the expiration. It starts an expiration policy and notifications of the owner, but it doesn't look like, from what I was reading, that there's really a delay between when those notifications go out or what that delay is between the notifications and when the meeting actually gets deleted.
And that's a tenant level policy, right? So it applies to everything.
It is a user level. This is a user level policy in your meeting policies. So the policy could vary based on user.
Gotcha.
So
I guess like just to, the whole meetings in OneDrive thing has been a little bit of a frustrating experience for me. Like I've realized lately one thing that's happening is if I have a meeting with somebody and I'm not the host of that meeting, or even if I am the host of that meeting, but I'm not the one who starts the recording isn't stored in my OneDrive. So I don't have access to do things like manage permissions. So I actually ran into this one earlier this week. I had given a webinar back in December to some of our team. And there were a couple team members who didn't attend that meeting. Like they're actually brand new to the team. They were hired over the holidays and they're coming in. So they were never a part of that meeting, which means they don't even know that the meeting took place, but I have links where I can send out, hey, here's a link to the deck. Here's a link to the meeting recording. If I send them a link to the meeting recording, a recording doesn't live in my OneDrive. It lives in the person who recorded it. So of course, they don't have access to it because they weren't an attendee of the meeting, because those are all kind of security trimmed automatically. And then you have to go through this weird dance of, well, let me figure out who's OneDrive out of the 30 people who attended that thing that the recording is in. Let me go find that person and then bug them to get them to either adjust the permissions or go ahead and give me permissions to it, because I don't even have permissions to it by default, so that I can download it and then put it someplace else, like put it into a shared repository or something like that, because it's knowledge that I want to be retained not only beyond 60 days, but also outside of the context of somebody's OneDrive. I want it to come back over and be in a SharePoint site where I can just dump it and it's already pre-security trimmed. And I know that every member of the team moving forward, if I send them that link from here on out, they're good. They can just get in and they can see that thing. And I can put the DAC and the meeting recording right next to each other and everything. But it's this just crazy dance. There's a lot of friction there that I have to go through as an end user to know who, like in my case, like I want to be the good citizen. I want to be the good collaborator. I want to download that video, put it someplace else where everybody can see it. But what's going to happen is if that person didn't come to me, they went to somebody else who attended that meeting, that person might go back to Teams and they would just send them the link to the recording out of Teams, which then points right back to that person's OneDrive and we're back in the same boat.
Yeah, and this is weird. And I did find the little blurb. So you get the notification that the meeting was deleted. You don't get like an approval of, hey, it expired, do you want it deleted? You essentially get, your meeting expired, it was deleted. If you want it back, you got to go to the recycle bin and recover it. But this brings up that whole point that you said where that notification only goes to the owner of the meeting recording. So in the scenario you just described, let's say because this is a user level retention policy, you get some change to yours where you can actually retain your meetings for 365 days, but this other person in the meeting only has a retention policy of 90 days. Now, they're the ones that hit record and ended up in their OneDrive. They're the owner of it. That meeting is now going to get deleted in 90 days because they're the ones that own the recording. And that policy is applied to them, not to you.
You know, for all the faults of Stream, like it was a lot easier when things were just in Stream and they all went to the same place and you knew where they were going every time.
Yeah. So you can set your organizational wide policy. Like you have your default meeting policy that this gets set in. But if you are in that scenario where you've created a bunch of different policies for different meetings, you've applied these different, and you've gone in and customized these, you can customize that default expiration time on a policy by policy basis, and then it will apply to whatever user. The user will get whatever is set in the policy that's applied to them. And you can go anywhere from this from one day up to 99,999 days or 273 years.
Yep. And these are expiration policies. They're not retention policies, right? So if a user wanted to go in and delete them ahead of time or they accidentally click delete, then they can absolutely do that before whatever policy you have set.
Yes. And that is a very key aspect to these is this has absolutely nothing to do with legal compliance retention settings. It is purely a automatic, I would call it like an automatic cleanup function. Go in and automatically clean stuff up, but you can definitely delete it ahead of time, move it ahead of time. Like there's nothing from a retention standpoint that is set with these. So those two, if you do have retention policies, you have compliance policies, you still need to go ahead and set retention policies and all of that ahead of time. If a retention policy will also win over this expiration. So if you have 90-day retention and a 60-day expiration on meetings, that 90-day retention will supersede that expiration policy and prevent it from being auto-expired after 60 days.
I wonder what that does in your audit log. Like, does it just gum it up? You know, you come back and see that later.
Well,
that it's been trying to delete it every day for, you know, in that case, maybe at like that 60-day, 90-day. So you've got that 30-day split. Is it trying to come back
denied.
Yeah, every day for 30 days. You just, can't do it.
Yes. And I don't know what it says. I was just looking to see too in this article is the retention policy will win, but it doesn't say like once that retention policy expires, does it actually try to keep deleting it every day? Like essentially, does it look for, is this greater than the expiration or does this equal the expiration?
I'm going to add it to those list of things that you have to play with.
That I have to go test this out. Because, so think through this scenario too. Let's say you have an expiration set for 30 days, right? So after 30 days, it deletes it. If it's looking at greater than, and you say, wait a minute, I don't want this deleted, and you go restore it from the recycle bin, does it get deleted the next day? Or does that somehow restart your retention cycle? Like, there could be some tension there. So I'm thinking it would try to look at equals, but then if people always go in to restore it, does it ever get cleaned up again? Or does it restart your 30-day countdown or 60-day countdown, whatever it is? There's some of that type of stuff that it doesn't really have in any of this documentation from an admin perspective on how all of that necessarily works.
Yeah, another thing that you're going to need to go figure out for us.
I am. I'm going to have to go play with this with my never-ending list of... I need like a month just to go play with stuff.
The month of learning.
A month of learning. I would say less client work, but then I can't pay the bills and I can't pay all of my subscriptions that I need to go play with this stuff.
Yeah, no, it's a double-edged sword.
It is a double-edged sword. But you can do this. This is available in the UI. So this is not a scripting only. You do not have to use Cloud Shell or PowerShell to do this. This is also there in the UI under the recording and transcription settings of your Teams meeting policies, where you can go set a toggle for if meetings automatically expire or not, and then set that default expiration time, which is just an integer. And the maximum time is 273 years, or you can set it to -1 and then they'll never expire. So if you want to keep it somewhere between 273 years and infinitely, you're out of luck. Once you hit 273 years, Scott, you've got to keep it forever if you want to keep it longer.
I'm not going to be here in 200 and some odd years, so I'm not going to worry about
73 years.
I'm not going to worry about that one too much.
Can you imagine?
No, I don't want to.
Well, can you imagine going and watching a video that was like 273 years old about the technology that we used and what we considered revolutionary, like listening to this podcast 273 years from now?
I mean, maybe it's good for like archival historians. I don't know. You know. Hopefully we're not all still doing SharePoint in 273 years.
Is it just going to be all implanted in our brains?
Whatever it is, it just better not be SharePoint.
Just no SharePoint.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
I have another topic, but I think it's going to go longer than what we might want to talk for.
Well, since we have a couple of minutes left, why don't we close out with some of the roadmap stuff that you discovered?
The roadmap? Yeah, I was thinking about that. Like, we can fit that in. So this was...
That's why I'm here, to help you out.
And just that's why you're here, to keep me on track.
Yeah, give you that guidance.
If you want to go down another rabbit hole, I was up late last night redoing an entire IP address subnet on my network. Side topic. So some roadmap stuff I discovered. I discovered this a couple of different ways. And so far, it is an exception, not the norm. But in the message center, within the last week or two, I had a message pop up that said, the in development page for Microsoft Intune is now available with a link to it. And ironically, today also, I was talking to somebody about Windows 365, and if a certain feature was there yet. And I started going out and looking for, is this feature supported in Windows 365 yet? And I found another page there in development for Windows 365 Enterprise, which got me thinking, what else is out there? And I also found an in development for Windows 365 Business. So what it appears, and again, these are the only three that you and I, Scott, have been able to find so far. And these are focused around Microsoft 365, Windows 365, is certain information. And we're guessing your supposition was that it is more, they wanted to put more information out there than what you're currently maybe allowed to put or can fit into the Microsoft 365 roadmap. Is on docs.microsoft.com, certain product groups are starting to create these in development pages to provide more details kind of around a roadmap. So for instance, in development for Windows 365 Enterprise has information on there about application management and using conditional access and Azure Virtual Desktop app policies. It has stuff around device management, support for Azure AD Cloud Join PCs, operating system end of support status, configuring installed languages and regions. And Intune is kind of similar to that. Intune has some app management stuff, password complexity, device security, device configuration. If you're curious about kind of what's coming, what some of these product groups are working on, and what the status of some of these features might be, this is another one of those areas that I would say go pay attention to. And maybe every once in a while, go do a site search on docs.microsoft.com for in development dash or in development for. The naming is not necessarily consistent between these, but it does give some additional insight into what some of these product groups are working on. And then it does say, still go to the Microsoft 365 roadmap to look for some timelines for some of these. And then they also tend to have a corresponding what's new page so that once they move out of development, they move over to the what's new in Microsoft Intune or what's new in Microsoft 365. So you can see regular, looks like it tends to be monthly-ish, maybe twice a month. It varies based on the features, updates to what has moved from that in development to now available or what's new.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's going to be based on kind of how, it appears to be based on how services execute their rollouts today. So whether those are biweekly, monthly rollouts, like whatever those look like. I mean, you showed these to me. I certainly don't have any insight into them. Like, we don't have a public roadmap for Azure. So, like, there's no analogous thing on our side of the fence. I kind of wish there was. Like, you know, we could probably get to the point where we have some form of public roadmap. But when you think about a roadmap and features that you are going to communicate to consumers of that product, there's varying levels of granularity there. There might be something that's it's a tentpole feature, and you really want people to know that it's coming. Like, we are releasing Microsoft Teams, blah, blah, blah. Like, Teams, the product coming out, like, that's a big thing. Later on down the road, managing meeting expirations for recordings in Teams, that's just a checkbox. It's a little thing. Like, you might expect it to be there as a customer and you might be waiting for it, but it's not a tentpole feature. Like, is that something that needs to be on a roadmap, or is that something that you just need to know is in development? Like, hey, we're thinking about it. It's coming later. Because if you put every single thing that's happening across every single product and every part of the Substack into the roadmap, it just becomes this like, blech, right? It's this thing that gets like spit out and thrown against the wall. And no one would be able to make heads or tails of it. So in this manner, your roadmap becomes tentpole features. Like, what are the things that we really want customers to not only understand are coming, but be excited about that they're coming, right? Your roadmap's a little bit of a marketing vehicle too, to announce that, hey, here's the things that are out there. And then where can we be more granular? Like, where can we be more open in the things that we are telling customers? And I think that's the total take I get with these in development pages. Like, there's more that's happening than just this. Like, these are not the only features that are in development at any given time across the product stack, but these are the disclosed in development features that somebody like gave the green light to and said, yep, you know, you can go ahead and talk about this and push this out to the world.
Right. And to your point, they don't seem to be quite as, I would say, marketing focused or headline worthy. It's a little bit more of the, not to put people in a box, but the nerdy, geeky, like, here's a very specific technical feature I'm looking for, or something that tends to be a little bit more specific to maybe to only, there's a small segment of people that are really going to care about this, but they want to know that it's coming and that it's in progress, it's being worked on. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a way to keep track of some of that. So, all right. Well, I think that wraps us up for our first 2022 episode.
Excellent. Another one in the bag.
All right. Sounds good. Well, go enjoy your weekend, Scott. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right. You know, it's cold again here in Florida. We're down in like the lower 60s today, Fahrenheit.
It's lower. So,
it's a little rough out there. Like, I had to put pants on today and I couldn't wear board shorts. So I'm looking forward to it. Like, we don't get a lot of cold weather here. So I'm going to go make some soup tonight. Potato soup.
Ooh, perfect. I'm
bacon
wearing shorts.
Crumble. Hamburger, cheeseburger soup.
Ooh, that sounds good. I'm coming over for dinner tonight, Scott.
All right. Well, I bought 2 pounds of beef just because.
Because you knew I would want to come.
Well, that and I need leftovers to freeze, but we'll see how that goes.
Then you don't want me to come. Me and my herd of kids, you would not have many leftovers.
Oh, that's right. You'd bring them all.
Yeah.
I love your kids, but there's a lot of them.
There are a lot of them, and they're very noisy. So go enjoy your soup with your kids in the cool weather, and I will do the same. And we'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.